and welcome to another episode of Fool's Daily. I'm Conrad, and today I'm joined by...
Rick Priestley, again. You can't keep me away, can you?
No, I think people enjoyed it so much that they've been clamoring for more. Well, at least one person, and we paid that person money as well.
Oh, fair enough. That's probably my mother.
Hello, Rick, and how are you today?
Oh, very well, thank you. The sun is shining. It's a bright, sunny day here in Nottingham. Yeah, not very nice. Makes a change, I can tell you.
Yeah, we need rain. Rain and flooding and more rain.
Well, you can keep it. You can keep it. I'm perfectly happy with the sunshine.
So what we're going to talk about today, we're going to talk about you. Not Goer.
Not Gates and Antares, my new project with Warlord Games, but just some blatheration, I think you officially called it, blatheration, about... wargaming and how on earth one starts in this silly hobby.
Yes, I mean, I'm 52 this year. How old are you, young chap?
Oh, wait a minute. I will count the tree rings. I'm 55.
Oh, not too far ahead of me, then.
You were one of those little sprogs I remember at school. You 3 years is 8 years. It's forever, isn't it?
Oh, you were the bloke who used to kick me in the ear. Oh, no.
No.
We won't talk about that. So how did you... I mean, I started when I was about 14.
You were a late developer.
I'd been making the obligatory Airfix models and kits and tanks. Mainly, I had a passion for planes, painting, and I had Airfix model soldiers as well, of various ilks, whether it be World War II or Ancients, and tried to get as much information as I could out of the library, which was very hard, really. But
did you find the Donald Featherstone books? Because they were in most of the libraries.
No, I found H.G. Wells' Little Wars.
Oh, right, okay. That's an interesting way to start, because that's although people talk about Little Wars as being, you know, the seminal wargaming book, if you read it, it's a very strange book.
Yes.
I mean, they recommend a playing area that's about twice the footprint of the average house. All the measurements are done with bits of string. And all the casualty calculation is done by firing little toy cannons at each other. You know, it's not a war game in a modern sense at all.
No. But I think that sort of fueled me to go and look for more stuff. I do remember Featherstone books, but I found them hard to get.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they were circulated in British libraries in the late 60s and early 70s, and so they were very, very easily available where I was anyway.
Okay.
I think you summarised probably what was the route into wargaming for almost everybody of our generation, probably a little bit older and a little bit younger, perhaps anywhere between 60. If you're now anywhere between 60 and 50, if you say to people, well, I just grew up putting Airfix toy soldiers, Airfix kits together and airplanes and tanks and all the things that Airfix did. It tended to be Airfix. You could get Matchbox and Frog early on as well.
Revell was around.
Yeah, there was a lot of Revell, but it was all imported, so it was all a bit random.
Yeah.
What you got was you sometimes got some spaceships, because I think Revell did a few spacecraft, which were interesting, and a lot of airplanes.
Yeah.
But I don't remember doing much else. We also had Aurora, who did stuff in 1/48 scale, I think.
I remember them. Yeah.
Yeah, and Pyro, who did dinosaurs, things like that.
Were Tamiya around at that time as well?
Yeah, but they were relatively expensive, and they were all very much modelers' stuff.
Yeah. You know, yeah.
But I remember a few of my friends had some of the Africa Corps figures, like 1/32 scale.
Yeah.
Which is stuck together. So, you know, that whole modelling. Painting kit, plastic kit, and the obsession with World War II, because World War II, I always say World War II was very big in the 60s, wasn't it?
Yeah, I suppose it was, really,
You think about all the classic World War II films that are on every Christmas, you know, Where Eagles Dare, Brought All to Danny Boy and all that, you know, The Longest Day, you know, all of those films, Battle of Britain, they were all 60s films.
So we were subjugated to that stuff, really?
Yeah, I think in our generation, and especially on TV, because the films were just starting to come through onto telly, we were just brought up with World War II as a medium of adventure.
Yeah.
Rather than as a serious, I mean, I suppose you could say there was some element of serious. I mean, there was a documentary, The World at War, wasn't there?
Yeah.
In the 70s. But, I didn't grow up as a child thinking of the political history of Germany and the rise of the Nazis and, you know, all the terrible goings on. You grew up thinking of the Battle of Britain and the Victor comic and all that sort of thing. And
it was like excitement, wasn't it, really? It was boys' own stuff to a certain extent.
It pretty much was. And I say Victor because that was the comic that tended to do World War II. But there were any number of boys' comics of that period that had similar kind of themes. None of it exists anymore, and it hasn't existed really for a long time. You still can get sort of, I think, is it Battle Magazine? There's still one of, you know, those little magazines.
Yes.
I think they are still going, but I suspect they only sell to people like you and me. Yeah, you know,
in brown envelopes, probably.
Yeah, I don't think youngsters buy them anymore. But we were young, you know, we were only, well, I was probably 11 when I made the transition from being just a kind of collector of ethics stuff and having that sort of general interest in World War II and war and adventure to being a war gamer with proper rules.
Mm.
I think what happened was, sorry, two things. The first thing was I just found a book on wargaming, and it was Battle Practical War Games by Charles Grant. I think that came out in 71, 70 or 71. And I bought that with, I think somebody had given me a book voucher.
Yep.
You know, this being a world of everything being made of wood and so on and so forth. And yeah, you got a book voucher for Christmas and birthdays.
You were lucky.
Lucky I. It just seems bizarre, doesn't it? I mean, it must be weird being like 30 years old or 20 years old and having no concept of a world without the computer, without the internet. And
yeah, no, absolutely. Book vouchers and record vouchers and things. And,
yeah, and no Wikipedia, so you really did have to know stuff.
Yeah.
It was just a totally different world. So that discovering of wargaming was quite a kind of revelation, really. Having been collected ethics toys, toy soldiers as toys, all my life, and having played kind of games that I wouldn't call war games, but having played with them, with my school friends, you know, in junior school, something like that, the fact that this could be a serious game and this could be a grown-up game and it's presented in that kind of way, this is something to take seriously, then it was quite a revelation. And I think myself and a few other friends who I met at school kind of arrived at all this often independently. And then we discovered we were all kind of fascinated by it, and it became a little group, clique.
Yeah.
And spread the word a bit. So, there were perhaps three, four of us in my class, and it's a class of 30, who you'd consider to be war gamers in the modern sense, which is quite a lot, isn't it, really?
It is, in a class that size, definitely.
Yeah, particularly for, it's been early 1970s as well. But then because we all had other friends within this, in the class, you know, we would tend to organise games, and a few hangers-on would join us. So, you know, we probably had about half a dozen, maybe a few more people in all, including a hardcore of people who really collected and read all the books and went to the library and took the Donald Featherstone books out of the library, copied all the rules out by hand or whatever. and we're really kind of the motivators, if you like. And there's probably me and Richard Halliwell were the main two, and there was a couple of other guys who probably don't wargame anymore, and I do see occasionally. But that was us, and we soon discovered that there was a wargames club in Lincoln, where I come from. And the only way we knew there was a wargames club was because I think we got a copy of Military Modelling started about the same time.
Yeah.
Did you guess it?
I used to try and get that, and there was another game. modelling magazine out at the time as well. That I can't remember what it was, but I definitely military modelling was something that I used to pore over because it would allow me access to figure manufacturers that I'd never heard of or seen before.
That was exactly it, because you say there's no internet, there's no way of finding out about these things.
Yeah,
and I think that first book I bought. Actually, because it was published by MAP, Model and Allied Publications, who also published military modelling. So it had an advert for military modelling in the back. And I just sought it out. And I think it had only been going for about 6 months at the time. So the first military modelling I ever bought was something like the September issue for the first volume. And it was in a little quarto size. It wasn't even the big, magazine size.
The A4 standard. Type style, yeah.
It was originally in a quarto, a tiny, tiny size, and it was in that for about 3 years, I think.
Really? I don't remember it that far back.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I've actually got a collection. I kept every military modelling I ever bought, right from 1971, or whatever it was, right through until about 1980, when I went to college. And after that, it's a bit sketchy, because I'd kind of gone on to other things and found other ways of... And also military modelling changed. It stopped being a war games magazine when it divided at some point, I think it was in the mid-70s, into military modelling and Battle for war gamers.
Yes, I do remember Battle now. I've got a couple of issues of that as well.
Yeah, so, well, a friend of mine started collecting the Battle, so I never bought any. But I continued with military modelling because it had all the adverts in it, which is what you wanted. And when the Battle folded, I don't think it sold enough. It re-amalgamated with military modelling, but it never, there was obviously there were two groups of people. There were the war gamers and there were the scale modellers. And it was obvious the scale modellers won the day. the wargaming in the post-battle military modelling was very much a token affair. So it was never the same magazine again. But in the early days, it was the driver. It's how you found out about anything. And an article in military modelling would inspire most of us to do the same thing.
No, exactly. Yeah, I mean, I found military modelling, and that allowed me access to rules that I found out about, and also things like, there was a bookshop not far away from me, and I didn't even know it was there, and it was essentially a military bookshop. And I used to go in there and look at the rule sets there, and that was like it was like nirvana for me, in terms of finding stuff to them.
Because there's no other way of finding it, is there?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, that's how I started in wargaming, and I think that's really very typical of how everybody of our generation started in wargaming, a general sort of interest in military history and models, and... then you take because society was much more focused in a way. It's the same thing on telly for everybody.
Yeah.
If the Battle of Britain was on telly, it wouldn't have been really. But say Where Eagles Dare was on telly, everybody saw it.
Yep.
Because there were only two channels.
So were you interested in Western stuff as well? Because there was a lot of rehashed westerns as well from
that. Gunfights.
Yep.
Yeah, okay. A little bit later you got spaghetti westerns. They became really quite big in the mid-70s. There were a whole series of western gunfight rules came out, including the Skirmish War Games Group, which is... I can't remember his name off the top of my head.
SWG.
It was Ian Colwell and Blake and one other guy. And they did a whole series of Skirmish War Games including colonial, and we got into that, and they were very detailed. Use a percentage dice. I mean, you remember the mid-70s, some of the rules got really complicated, especially once the D100s came out. And we played some naval wargaming, aerial combat. We played gladiatorial, ancient naval, a lot of ancients. We got quite into ancients when the WRG rules, I think it was the second edition came out. And again, that was advertised in military modelling. I think I sent off the WRG Ancient Rules and the first edition of Macedonian and Punic Wars by Phil Barker at the same time.
Yep.
And that was really the start of ancient wargaming in a popular sense. Yeah. And I'd always been interested in ancients coming from Lincoln. I'd always had that connection with Romans, you see, because as kids we were all dragged around all the ancient monuments and forced to draw Romans in art class and this sort of thing. So those, and you know, there's the Airfix Romans as well and that sort of thing. So you know, there was that connection there.
Don't forget the ancient Britons.
Yeah,
as well.
The ancient Britons. Oh, yeah, absolutely, had all that and the little fort they did, the Age of War fort, which I've actually been to before. That's all based on. Yeah. So again, you know, it's just a very typical kind of how that generation of people got into war games. And a lot of the war game books of that period, they present rules, but they don't present rules in a very pure sense. They're really describing a game.
Yeah.
I've always kind of taken that approach to war games rules. I don't think a set of war games rules should be a set of your bland instructions. You know, I think they should be about the game. Should explain what's going on.
Do you think there was an element of them trying to inject a bit of realism in there as well? You know, as best as they could, based on reading or information they'd picked up as well.
Well, bear in mind, Donald Featherstone was in he was in a tank regiment in World War II. He was in Churchill's.
Yes.
Brigadier Peter Young, who wrote Charge, was in charge of Commando Brigade and was a decorated war hero. I don't know what Charles Grant did in World War II. He was a policeman in later life. He was a police inspector in later life, in the drug squad, I think. He was quite heavy, you know, he was quite serious. So I think all that generation of writers had actually pretty much real experience of World War II. So when they were writing rules, they knew what they were talking about. In terms of general history, I mean, Donald Featherston wrote general history books as well. He had a good idea of particularly Victorian warfare. But he'd often, you know, even with that breadth of knowledge, their rules would often be quite simple. I don't think they saw complexity in the rules as being a good thing. You know, I think they saw realism as coming from the gameplay rather than the rules. And in any case, not being an absolute requirement, you know, I don't think they saw it as being an absolute requirement of the game.
Okay.
Which is interesting, isn't it? But if you read Battle Practical War Games, you'll see it's not actually, it's a set of World War II rules. But the premise is very, it's similar to the Brigadier Peter Young's Charge. It's that, you know, you make up a nation that's vaguely World War II. You equip it with whatever equipment you want. It could be German, it could be Russian, it could be American, it could be a mix of all those.
That's quite novel.
You paint it how you like. At the time, it wasn't. It was the same basis that Charge is written on. You know, although it's basically Seven Years' War as a background, the armies that are being recruited and fight are all mythical or imaginary nations.
Yeah,
they're not necessarily real. They saw it as an expression of an imaginary world that we were going to fight over.
Okay, well, thank you very much for that, Rick. I'm sure we'll have you back to talk about some other blatherations. But we've run for about 18 minutes, so Mike's going to be very annoyed with me. So for the time being, I've been Conrad.
I think I've been Rick Priestley.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
You can contact Fools Daily on Twitter, we're at Fools_Daily, or via email, foolsdaily@outlook.com.